And welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 520 for Wednesday, the 25th of January, 2017. My name is Harry Lloyd, coming to you from a quite cold Reading in the UK. And I've just had the slightly horrible thought that I don't think I've locked my car, but I'm not going to go down and check it because it's been sitting there for 6 hours. So if somebody's stolen all of my shit, it's going to be gone anyway. And joining me for what hopefully won't be an eventful Motopod is Skylar Vicroy, all the way from the US of A. Skylar, how are you going? Great to have you back after our somewhat extended winter break.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be back. I'm doing good. Life has been moving quite fast for me, getting a lot of things planned here on my end and taking some trips, and I'm sure I'll be talking about that in the future. But it's good to be back on the show. It's good to start talking about motorcycles again.
Yes, exactly. And we do have some things to start talking about. You know, as we said, Dave and I, we did our little bit of the show last week, and, you know, a couple of teams have launched now, and there's one or two things to talk about. Ducati, as ever, have us very much intrigued from the technical side of things, as GG Deligne continues to be a bit of a mad genius. But before we get into the news, we have to say a big thank you to John Michael Allen, James Dewitt, and Chris Court for your continued supporting of the Motopod podcast. A big thank you to everybody who does donate, support, and subscribe, and all those good things. All the details for that can be found on the motopodcast.com website. We also had a bit of listener feedback. You know, we asked for people's racing stories. Obviously, Skylar, before the winter break, you shared a fantastic racing story with us where you were, you know, involved in an incredible comeback. We also got a message in from Scott Bolton, which we'll play just after this first bit of other listener feedback. So this listener feedback comes in from Len Padilla, a name familiar to hopefully everybody out there. And he actually sent us in 4 racing memories. So we're going to do 2 now and 2 next show so we can space out that content nice and evenly. So Len's first racing memory, Laguna Seca 1988. I was not born yet. First time going to a GP and first time on track, magic weekend. Corner working a riding school, CSS, I think that's California Superbike School, but I could be wrong, in return for track time. I thought I was fast on my RD350 LC until a really fast guy came past me on the back wheel up the hill from T6 to T7, nearly shat myself. Excellent one there. Then Len's second racing memory is practice during an AFM, brackets club, race weekend at Sears Point. Since I rode a 650 twin, I rode in the 750 superbike class, among others. The following weekend, there was an AMA superbike race at Sears, so some of the privateers entered our weekend, which meant sharing the track with them. Another eye-opener as to what fast really is. I specifically remember Dale Quarterly coming past me between T2 and T3, sliding and smoking the rear tyre. I'd never seen anything like it. So excellent first-hand accounts there from Len about, you know, how different races are from us mere mortals, because, races are pretty quick, you know. We say it a lot, but even the slowest guy or girl in Moto3 is still faster than, you know, your average track day rider who pays, you know, $6 million for a pimped-out Panigale. They're still not going to be, you know, any faster than, say, I don't know who's usually towards the back, Manuel Pagliani. He was towards the back a fair bit in Moto3. So yeah,
this is pretty special. These guys are loaded full of talent. The same thing, you go out of tracking. What will really get you going is you hop on your nice shiny 600 and you're thinking you're going fast, and a guy in a 250 passes you on the outside of the turn while he's looking at you, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm not as cool as I thought I was, that's for sure.
Yep, exactly. You always see great photos whenever there's, you know, mixed track days of some. There's always some guy on a supermoto bike who is just sliding around the outside of some guy on like an RR or a ZX10. So there's always one, and races take that to an even higher extreme. So now you're going to hear from Scott Bolton, so another Motopod host, sending in their racing memories, and then we'll magically appear after Scott has said his piece. So catch you in a second.
Zoom, zoom.
Hello, everybody out in Motopod land. This is Scott Bolton, and I'm here to share one of my favorite road racing memories. This is actually from a blog post I entered on my now dormant blog page back in 2012, so if it sounds like I'm reading it off, I am. 1994 was not an easy year for me. My first marriage had ended, and I'd taken a pretty big financial hit, to say the least, so any cheap entertainment that I could find was a welcome sight. Atlanta radio station 96 Rock was giving away tickets to the AMA races at Road Atlanta, and I managed to win a pair of them. Up until that time, I'd been a big NASCAR fan as my dad had followed that sport for many years. And although motorcycle racing was on my radar, it wasn't my favorite form of motorsport. That was September weekend was about to change that and more. That Friday, I took a day off from work and headed to the track. Upon arriving, I went to the fastest part of Road Atlanta, which is its long back straightaway, just about the time the Superbikes were beginning their first practice session. I was instantly blown away by the sight and sound of the riders rocketing past my viewing location. I had seen race cars on paved oval tracks going faster, but this was a totally different experience for me, as the riders were so visible and exposed to the elements. This seemed to really intensify the sensation of speed as I watched from trackside. I quickly tried to familiarize myself with the riders and bikes, and what I soon discovered was that this was not an ordinary race weekend. That weekend was the last race on the AMA schedule for 1994, and championships were on the line. I was enthralled with all of the classes racing, but my best memories are of the Superbike race. Vance and Hines Yamaha mounted Jamie James came into the weekend with a 3-point lead over rookie sensation Troy Corser on an FBF fast by Ferracci Ducati. Scott Russell was there on his Muzzy Kawasaki during a break from the World Superbike Series, where he was the defending champion. And Mick Doohan, who would soon win his first of five consecutive 500 GP titles, was there to support his brother Scott. More on him later. In qualifying, it was James' teammate, Colin Edwards Jr., riding the momentum from winning the previous three races, edging Russell for the pole with FBF Ducati-mounted Pascal Picat and Dave Sadowski rounding out the front row. Title contenders James and Corser would start on row two in fifth and sixth places, respectively. Sadowski had leased an FBF Ducati for this race, hoping to put in a good enough showing to secure a ride on the team for 95, and would end up playing a pivotal role in the championship battle. At the start of the race, Picat pulled the hole shot, but when the field came back around to complete lap one, it was Mike Smith on the Smokin' Joe's Honda out front, followed by Picat, Sadowski, James, and Russell. After a couple of laps, Russell dropped the hammer and went from fifth to first during the course of a single lap, and immediately the Georgia native set sail from the rest of the field on his home track. Behind him, Edwards had broken free in second in vain pursuit of the leader, while Corser had moved into the top five. By lap nine of the 25-lap race, the battle for second had really heated up as the FBF Ducatis had caught Edwards, with James having caught up to the back of the battle for second. At the halfway point of the race, Russell had a comfortable lead, followed by Edwards, Corser, Picat, Sadowski, and James, all in a fierce battle for the runner-up spot. As the second half of the race ensued, things began to heat up in the fight for the championship. In an act of true teamwork, Edwards waved James by into fifth and fell in behind him as the teammates began moving towards the front of the group. By lap 17, James had moved into third behind Corser and soon passed him to lead the group, with Edwards falling in behind him, which put big smiles on the faces in the Vance and Hines pits. Corser went back around Edwards and began challenging James for the second position, but on lap 19, the X-up valve seized up on James Yamaha, and he started dropping back. The last five laps of the race were frantic, as Corser began sliding back while Picat, thinking James had retired, went after Edwards for second, only for Sadowski to pass them both with only a couple of laps left. With one lap to go, and Sadowski having proved his point, he began to fall down the order, leaving Edwards and Picat to settle things for the runner-up spot. Although James had encountered problems, he was still in seventh place, which was good enough for the title if Corser finished fifth. On the last lap, as they started down the back straightaway, Sadowski seemingly allowed Corser by into fourth. As they took the checkered flag, it was Russell taking a dominating win, followed by Picat, Edwards, Corser, and Sadowski. By finishing fourth, Corser took the championship by a single point over 7th place James in what would be his only season competing in the AMA Series, as both he and Edwards made the jump to the World Superbike Series the following year. Unfortunately, the race was somewhat marred by a bizarre on-track altercation between two riders. As I mentioned earlier, Mick Doohan's brother Scott was there racing that weekend on a Ducati. On the first lap of the race, as the bikes went through turn two, Doohan and Brad Hazen, also on a Ducati, had a coming together which sent Hazen off into the grass. Hazen managed to keep his bike upright and rejoin the race without losing much time, but soon after the initial incident, corner workers reported seeing the two riders punching and kicking at each other as the race progressed. All this came to a head on the last lap as they exited Gravity Cavity, which was the fastest part of the Road Atlanta circuit. And apparently taking each other out as they went under the Suzuki Bridge at Turn 11. All I could see from my vantage point on the back straight was an explosion of hay bales as the bikes and riders slid off the track. Both riders were badly injured, with Doohan being in a coma for several days at an area hospital. But fortunately, both eventually recovered. The nature of the incident prompted the AMA to suspend both riders from the series for unsportsmanlike conduct, and even had local law enforcement considering a criminal investigation into the incident. That September weekend in 1994 began for me a passion for motorcycles and the sport of racing them that continues to grow to this day. I put some pictures on my blog post that I'd taken that weekend. If you're interested in seeing them, you can find them on my blog at motodog650.wordpress.com. And if you just click on the tag Road Atlanta, it'll be just a few articles down on that page. Hope you enjoyed. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
So a big thank you to Scott Bolton for that one. If you would like to be like Len and or Scott, you can send either your written emails or your audio recordings, happy for that as well, to motopod@motopodcast.com. That is the email address. Goes to all the hosts. Everybody will see that. We do have a couple more emails stored up for the coming weeks. As we said, we still have two more of Len's racing memories, both of which are quite good and do involve GP races, or at least former GP races. So look forward to those from Mr. Padilla. So now on to the news. Obviously, this is the bulk of the show with no racing going on. AMA Supercross is on, but you know, we can only cover so much motorcycle racing, so we don't cover the old dirt stuff, but that has been very exciting.
I don't know, Harry, did you see what happened to Ken Roczen this week?
I did see what happened to Ken Roczen this week. For anybody who hasn't seen that, you should go on the AMA Supercross Twitter feed and look at Ken Roczen's crash. They have a highlight clip of that up. And then go to Ken Roczen's Instagram to see what his arm looked like after that crash.
If you have a strong stomach, don't go there if you're quite queasy at such blood and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty rough. I mean, to put the injury, what did he have? He had dislocated wrist, dislocated elbow, compound fracture of the radius, I think.
Yep.
And that's all on the same arm. So basically everything below his elbow was no bueno.
Yeah, it basically got folded in half. He's going to take a little bit to recover from that one.
Yes, I think he put out one of the first things he put out was saying that he only wanted to miss three rounds of Supercross, and with Supercross racing basically every weekend, I don't see that being very realistic.
No, considering he was also saying painkillers didn't work for the first 2 days, that he could still feel everything, I'm pretty sure after all the surgeries, he may need to take the season off.
Yeah, I mean, there were some people who said that this could be, you know, a career-defining injury. So all the Motopod best to Ken Roczen. And yeah, as I said, if you do want to see a bit of Supercross and haven't seen it before, then do go to the Monster Energy Supercross Twitter account and go through some of their highlight clips, because it is quite good. You know, a main event race for the Supercross is only 15 minutes. So if you're a bit bored on a Sunday without any MotoGP or World Superbike action, then Supercross is always always a bit of fun. Plus, yeah, the crashes can be a bit spectacular if you're into that kind of thing. But speaking of spectacular, we have some more Circuit of Wales news. Everybody's favourite international road racing circuit. So first of all, sorry to Phil Mayhew, who is playing the Motopod Circuit of Wales drinking game, where every time we mention Circuit of Wales, he has to take a drink. So sorry to your liver there, Phil. But yeah, so Circuit of Wales, you know, we've been through all the dramas. We know that everything's a bit not great. You know, we were meant to be racing there from, I think, 2014 onwards. And so the Welsh government have finally gotten fed up and said to the Circuit of Wales, okay, you have 2 weeks to basically tell us how you're going to get the money to do this, or we're not going to give you any money as the government.
Ooh, not sounding good.
No. So as I said, this project was meant to start in like 2013. So they now have to do what they've failed to do in 4 years, i.e. find the funding, in 2 weeks. So yeah, I'm not sure how that's going to work.
best of luck.
Yeah, so Circuit of Wales have a contract with Dorna to run the British MotoGP for 10 years. So I think that expires in 2023, or maybe it's 2024. But basically, Dorna and the Circuit of Wales have ensured that there will always be a British Grand Prix, even if the Circuit of Wales isn't built. So right now, basically, the Circuit of Wales is renting Silverstone and running the British Grand Prix at Silverstone, sort of like you'd rent a circuit for a private test. So Dorna are happy, they're getting their money. Silverstone seem pretty happy because they don't have to pay, you know, basically for the rights to run the race at that track. So they're making money. It's just Circuit of Wales that's losing a lot of money because obviously, you know, they're paying for the privilege to have MotoGP at their track, but there's no track to race on. So yeah, those dramas
anyone that's
continue.
In the business of wanting to build a track, I can tell you it's probably best to build the track and then get the races. And also, it's becoming much harder and harder to build racetracks in this world, considering we're all running out of space, and environmentally they're not the friendliest thing. So a lot of green thumbs are going to give you a big no when you want to build a track. I mean, that's why we're running out of tracks here in California. We used to have probably up to 10 at one point. I think we're down to about 4.
Yeah, so that is not great, but yeah, we will keep you updated on the Circuit of Wales news as it comes, but as we've sort of been saying for the last about 2 years, it's not looking great for the Circuit of Wales, and I don't think we'll ever get to actually go there, but I'm happy to be proven wrong. So as I mentioned last show, there were some bike reveals coming up. I cut back in to talk about the Yamaha livery. That was basically unchanged. Ducati also had their launch again, almost identical. A couple of sponsor stickers shifted round. You know, pretty weird to see Jorge Lorenzo in red still. That's still something that, you know, takes a bit of getting used to. Maverick Vinales seemed to have slotted into Yamaha blue a lot more easily than Jorge Lorenzo has Ducati red. And if you squint your eyes, Maverick Vinales, you know, especially with his red number 25, really looks a lot like Jorge Lorenzo on that Yamaha in terms of livery. So, you know, if you squint your eyes, it's like nothing's changed.
I think the only difference is, I think Maverick smiles. I think that's the only difference that you can really see in the pictures, because he looks like a kid that's quite happy to be on that team, whereas Lorenzo looked like someone who was like, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Speaking of Lorenzo and Ducati, you know, we expected something big was coming from Ducati, and Ducati have debuted at a private test in Sepang, the Salad Box, which is a great name for anything, the Salad Box. And I'm not sure how it got its name. When Michele Pirro, the test rider, was first asked about what this black box on the rear of the Ducati, where the tail exhaust is, right under the rear seat, when he was asked what it was for, he said, it's to keep my lunch. You know, it gets quite hot in Sepang, so keep a bottle of water in there. And then when GG Delinea was asked, he said it's a salad box as well. So now, much like winglets, where they weren't technically winglets, they were strakes or whatever. It's now known as the Salad Box, but it's a big black box at the back of the Ducati, and nobody knows what it does or what it is. The consensus on Twitter from all of the Twitter experts seems to be that there's something electrical in there. But beyond that, nobody knows.
I'm taking a look at the picture right here, and there's definitely some cables going to the bottom of the box, but nothing that stands out would make any sense of what that could possibly be. It doesn't even look that aerodynamic. It just kind of looks literally like a box that was shoved under the tail section.
Yeah, so I'll include a link to some Moto Matters tweets where he sort of goes through what he thinks it is. But it seems like there's also definitely a temperature sticker on the side of that box. So maybe what they've done is maybe they've moved the ECU from the front of the bike to the back, maybe to try and save weight and, I don't know, maybe open up the air box or something like that. I'm sort of talking out of my ass here, so... but yeah, as you say, there are wires going to it, so it's definitely something electrical. You know, there's no fuel lines or anything like that, so it's not like they've extended the tank. It's quite the mystery.
I'm sure we'll find out, as people tend to probe into that stuff quite regularly, and then
yep, exactly.
We only have a couple weeks till the official test, or not even a couple days.
It's yeah, a couple of days. It'll probably only be about 2 or 3 days before we have the first official Sepang test, and I'm sure that we'll find out what's happening with that there. GG Deligna, in an interview with, I believe it was Crash.net, also said that the fairing that Ducati are running now is basically still the 2016 fairing, just without winglets. So he still has some tricks up his sleeve for Qatar. So GG Deligna continues to be the most exciting engineer in MotoGP. And then there's lots of private testing going on in Sepang. All of the manufacturers are out there with their test riders, which means Mika Kallio for KTM, Mike Demeglio for Aprilia, Nakasuga for Yamaha, Hiroshi Oyama for Honda, and then Michele Pirro and Casey Stoner for Ducati. It looks like both Pirro and Stoner will also be at the public MotoGP test, as we said, coming up next week. So that should be very exciting. You know, always good to see where Casey Stoner slots in compared to the regular guys. And GG Deligna also, in an interview with Crash.net, again said, you know, if Stoner wants to race, we're happy to give him a bike. But honestly, we don't think Stoner wants to race. So hopefully we can finally stop talking about if Casey Stoner's going to come back and race, because I don't think he is. But I didn't think Guy Martin would come back and race. And now look at him. He's doing the TT with factory Honda. So what do I know?
Well, this is true. Stoner seems to be... I think he loves being on the bike, doesn't love all the stuff that comes with the racing, so he's quite happy where he is.
Yep, certainly. So in more testing news, big testing show. We're coming up to a big block of testing, so expect to hear us say the word testing a lot. So there's a World Superbike, World Supersport, and Superstock test at Jerez. Keenan Sefuoglu was meant to be there, but he unfortunately broke his right wrist while supermoto riding, so he is now certainly out of the European Supersport tests and is aiming to be back for the Phillip Island preseason test just a couple of days before the race. But Sefuoglu is definitely in a race to get as fit as he can for Phillip Island, and it doesn't look like he's going to be 100% fit for that, basically no matter what happens. So that could be good for a lot of people in Supersport, because we know how dominant Keenan Sefuoglu is, and so maybe if he does start the season on the back foot, then he'll make the title chase that little bit closer.
One could hope. Or he could just do Sefuoglu things and come out and still finish in the top 10. The guy is insane.
Exactly. That is very true. In more Phillip Island news, Josh Brooks will be riding on his BSB winning Yamaha there. So that'll be great to see what Josh Brooks can do on the Yamaha. You know, when we first heard the rumors about Josh Brooks and Sean Muir Racing moving up, we were really excited to see what Brooks could do on the Yamaha. So hopefully he'll be able to deliver now. Obviously the spec between BSB and World Superbike is a little bit different, but hopefully Josh Brooks can get some redemption after a pretty disappointing season last year on the BMW.
Huh, that's interesting. I didn't know Brooks was actually going to race the first round. That'll be, I'm kind of excited to see. I mean, it'll be a little different because he's not running with the Milwaukee team, who had that bike quite dialed in, because the Yamaha isn't the easiest bike to get set up. There was, it definitely requires a certain type of rider, but that could be, you know, if he goes out, especially if he goes out there and beats the Milwaukee team, that'd be a bit of a pick your finger towards that direction and keep on going.
Yeah, that would be a pretty big feat for Brooksy. I think, unfortunately for Brooksy, beating the Milwaukee team could be a bit tough, because as we said, there was superbike testing in Jerez. It was Jonathan Rea who, despite a pretty big crash, did top testing with a 139.8 around Jerez. But second in testing was Lorenzo Salvadori on that Aprilia RSV4 with the Milwaukee team. He was only 0.1 of a second behind Johnny Rea, so... Salvadori's looking pretty good. He looked pretty quick last year, had a lot of flashes of brilliance, but crashed a fair bit, and maybe wasn't with the best team. But I think Salvadori could be a good one to watch in this season coming up for a couple of podiums here or there. So definitely watch out for that that young Italian. And then third, who also had a crash, much like his teammate Tom Sykes. He was third overall, 0.4 of a second slower than Jonathan Rea. Sykes walked away with a bit of a neck injury from his crash. So that isn't anything too serious, but it did sort of slow him down a bit with a bit of a stiff neck. And then, somewhat surprisingly, actually, but great to see in fourth place, was Marco Melandri with his bleach blonde dyed hair, which is an absolutely fantastic look. Every racer should adopt it. But no, yeah, Melandri in fourth, ahead of Chaz Davies. Sure, he's only 0.011 ahead of Chaz Davies, but Marco Melandri's coming back quick. And when Marco Melandri is quick, he can win races and challenge for a championship. And I'm so excited for that.
Absolutely. He's come back to a really strong team at that. But the fact that he's ahead of Davies already is impressive, because it's one thing to be out there testing. It's another to be racing. Davies spent all last year racing, and he's got that bike dialed in for him. And Melandri had a few off tests towards the end of last year. But to be this quick against the field on that bike against a guy who, would, for better part, if had a better beginning to the season, would have been challenging for the title at the end, that's quite impressive for Marco. And that makes, I think, Superbike's going to be quite exciting, because now, like you said, with Savadori and Melandri just stepping into those names, Davey, Sykes, and Ray alone, before you even add the rest of the field, that's going to make things quite exciting this year.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. So yeah, Chaz Davies was fifth, and just behind Marco Melandri. Nice mix of names there. Nicky Hayden was sixth on that new Honda. Obviously, if you read, you know, if you read any standard motorcycling press, you know, about production road bikes, there was the Honda CBR1000 launch in Portimao, and that's been getting huge reviews. You know, much like the Yamaha R1, lots of people were describing it as basically a 600 on steroids. Very, very light through the corners, but huge power. So pretty excited to see what that Honda can do with Hayden and Stefan Bradl. They do have a bit of an uphill battle, because this was their first test on that bike. So, you know, they're having to develop that bike from a stock bike to get it to be, you know, hopefully a championship contender for round one, you know, at the end of February in Phillip Island. So it's going to be really, really hard season for that Tenkate team.
Yeah, and not to mention Stefan Bradl, he's having to adapt from GP, different bike, different tires, and all that good stuff. And don't forget, Hayden's still recovering from when he twisted his knee and has surgery. Yeah. He's still posting pictures on Instagram going through therapy. He doesn't look quite comfortable yet. He's still struggling with that injury a bit. So, you know, to him to be finishing already this high, that's pretty good. And of course, in Hayden, you know, fashion, I think he ran about the fifth most laps out there. So
yeah, exactly.
For a guy with a twisted knee, that's not bad.
Yeah, exactly. That's one thing you can always count on with Nicky Hayden. He will always run an absolutely massive amount of laps, no matter what condition he is in. He will just go out there and pound in the laps. And, you know, when you have a new bike to develop, that's exactly what you want. You want somebody who's as dedicated as Hayden. You know, all of these riders are dedicated, but when it comes to testing, you know, Hayden is an absolute machine, and he's also so, so experienced. You know, he's worked obviously with Honda a lot, worked with Ducati, so, you know, he has a lot of experience on that bike. So I think the combination of Nicky Hayden and Stefan Bradl could pay off towards the end of the season once they've had some time to get that bike technically up to scratch. And then behind Nicky Hayden was Alex Lowes on the Yamaha. So, you know, pretty nice mix of manufacturers up there. Xavi Fores, he was 8th ahead of Stefan Bradl, 9th. Michael Vandermark was 10th as he adapts to that new Yamaha. Have to see what that new Yamaha can do. You know, we said last season we really expected more from that Pata Yamaha team. Lowe showed flashes of speed but couldn't keep it upright. You know, Vandermark, he, much like Jonny Rea before him on the Honda, was doing some incredible things on a bike that just wasn't quite up to it. So he definitely has the potential there. So really big year for that Yamaha team. And as we said, with Josh Brooks wildcarding at the Phillip Island round, that factory Yamaha team really has to beat Josh Brooks, or else there could be a question or two asked, I think.
Yeah, that might that wouldn't be good. That'd be great for Josh, but not good for that team.
Then in 11th place was Randy Krumenacker. He unfortunately had a pretty big crash on the last day, so he's out injured for the next test. But Leon Haslam, who was also at that test but testing for BSB, he'll step in to the Pichetti Racing team to keep testing while Krumenacker recovers from his injuries. So that is absolutely fantastic for Leon Haslam. He obviously had a pretty good wild card in World Superbike at the last round of the championship in what year was last year? 2016. That's the last year.
gone so soon.
Exactly. Gone so soon. And then Marcus Ryderberger, Eugene Laverty, really, really, really concerning, I would say, to see Laverty down in 13th. You know, obviously all these times of testing, so grain of salt. But I was really expecting Laverty to be inside the top 10. He's over 2 seconds slower than Jonathan Rea.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up because I was looking over the time list and that was one thing that stuck out to me was why is Laverty so far down? And I don't expect him to go out there, like you said, be cheating, beating Johnny Rea, but to be in 13th behind, you know, a rookie Krumenacker on the bike and guys who are just getting dialed in. And
even guys, to be so far from his teammate, you know, almost two seconds from his teammate.
Yeah, I just, and you know that that bike is solid. They, you know, they just slapped different stickers on it, took it probably the same bike from last year with the Aprilia factory help to boot. And I hope it's just him working through his paces, getting comfortable, learning the bike, and then he's going to really maybe start to push. Maybe, and then again, these guys keep stuff to themselves. Maybe he's not feeling all too well, but that guy's way too talented to be sitting mid-pack in his comeback. I hope there's just a little hiccup before he gets going.
Yeah, he was complaining a lot about getting the bike turned. That's where he said he really needed to focus on improving it, is, you know, on the last part of the stopping and then getting turned into the corner. I think the Shaw Muir team are testing with everybody else in Portimao this weekend coming up. So hopefully he can get that sorted out there. And then obviously there's also the pre-season test in Phillip Island where they can keep doing some tweaks. But then we're on to racing. So, you know, if there are these big issues, they really need to get them sorted out ASAP.
Yeah, that's going to be hamper. He doesn't need to start the season on the back foot. If he wants to be a title contender, especially with the way like Melandre's going, you're going to have 5-6 guys who can all win every weekend. And you're going, I mean, the Kawasaki's and the Ducati's are the bikes that are going to be up front. And if you want to poke that, you need to be, well, you're already kind of 1 foot in back doing this. You need, I don't know. They like you said, they need to sort it out quickly, very quickly.
Yep, they really, really do. And then Jordi Torres, he was 14th on the final day because he, like Krumenacker, had a crash and injured himself. So, you know, best wishes to everybody who had a bit of a knock in that World Superbike test, and hopefully everybody's nice and healthy. In the World Supersport testing, it was Zulfami Karadon who led the way with a 144.4 ahead of Jules Cluzel, who stepped back to the PTR Honda team, ahead of Moto2 refugee Robin Mulhauser, ahead of Nacho Calero, Kyle Ride on the Pichetti Racing team. He was fifth fastest, ahead of Hikari Okubo on the other PTR bike. So, you know, nice mix of World Supersport names there. We obviously don't really know what the factory Yamaha Supersport team, what their times are like. They're obviously the big ones to watch with that new bike. And then, as we said before, you know, we know Kenan Sofoglu is going to be a threat. He's always a threat. He's, you know, a 5-time champion for a reason.
Right. And that, the new new-ish Yamaha, it's got the, with the Superbike forks, I think, on it, and it's got the same frame, the same engine.
Yeah.
New and fairing, different body work. Yeah, new fairing, which it does look nice, I have to admit.
It looks really
nice. But, you know, even having said that, it wasn't like that bike was slow when it left. So if you're improving upon what was at the time probably the greatest 600 when it was racing, because it would, no bike would dust any other bike in the field, like when, especially like when Cal was on that bike. If he got that thing dialed in for a week, for the weekend, no one would touch him. So, and, you know, Davies and Sam Lowe's as well. So, you know, just small updates might make a big improvement on that bike. So it could be a good year in World Supersport for Yamaha, which they could need on their comeback, because their Superbike's not looking the greatest right now.
Yeah, it does look just a bit, I don't know, it's strange, right? We've spoken about this so much, you know. The R1 did so well in Moto America, continues to do so well in Moto America, and it did so well in BSB. That, yeah, it's strange that it can't quite work in the World Superbike format, but, you know, the proof will be in the pudding when they all go racing in Phillip Island. As we said, it's fast approaching now, so not too long at all. And I think that is more or less all of the news from this week, unless you can think of anything else that I may have missed on my scourging of the internet.
I think you've covered most. I saw Cal come across my Twitter feed. Cal Crutchlow had gotten the Torrens Trophy?
Cal Crutchlow won the Torrens Trophy, which is a big honour in the UK. It's been won by guys like Shaky Byrne. I think John McGuinness has won it. Ian Hutchinson has won it. So it's a pretty high accolade in British motorcycle racing.
Oh, if you miss seeing Mark Marquez's antics on a motorcycle, you need to go watch him take a MotoGP bike with spiked tires and ride it uphill in the snow. And actually, in true Marquez style, we'll get both wheels off the ground, going uphill in the snow, getting it loose, and manage to hang on and get off and act like that's what he was meant to do the entire time. That guy is something else.
Yeah, and for anybody asking, in that video, I think that was, I'm not sure if that was the road-going Honda or if that was one of the open MotoGP Hondas, but it was definitely, you know, not like a normal CBR with a fairing kit. That was definitely, you know, derived from MotoGP, shall we say. There wasn't much faking in that, it didn't seem. And yeah, if you haven't seen that, definitely go watch that video, because it's what happens when you get Red Bull with their infinite money and Marc Marquez with his infinite balls together, and it's pretty special.
Money and boredom equal crazy things.
Yep, exactly. But the boredom is about to stop. You know, we do have the Sepang test coming up. I'm pretty sure that MotoGP.com are doing some sort of coverage from there. I saw Amy Dargan, the MotoGP reporter, saying that her, Matt Burt, Nick Harris, Steve Day, and Dylan Gray are all going out to Sepang. So it seems like MotoGP/Dorna will have some sort of live testing program. So, you know, if you are bored and either want to stay up all night or don't have anything better to do at your desk job, then I'm sure you can tune into that one. And yeah, you know, the news is going to go crazy with whatever inventions Ducati have. And, you know, I'm sure that Yamaha and Honda have one or two tricks up their sleeve as well. And then, you know, we get to see some incredible things. Obviously, Maverick Vinales, you know, how fast is he? Jorge Lorenzo, how fast is he on the Ducati? You know, have Honda fix that troublesome engine? Will Marc Marquez be even faster? It's gonna be a great year.
How's the Suzuki going? Inoue, how he's, you know, he's all healed up. He can come back, and how fast he's gonna go, and see if Renz is gonna get any more dialed in with that bike, because he was a little slow at the Valencia test while he was learning. But see if he gets up to speed in the next couple days at the Sepang test, and you get to see all the, hopefully maybe some new testing liveries, which is always exciting, and. I love testing. It's great because on the West Coast we get to watch it in a comfortable time. You know, it's like that nice like 7 o'clock in the evening. So typically I'll have my laptop open with just the test feed kind of running in the background as I'm doing other things, and when I see a bike and get a check out, and if they do it like Valencia, they do they cut away for a good 10, 15, 20 minutes, and they just do slow-mo shots the whole time, and you really get a good look at all the bikes. So that's always nice. But yeah, that's speaking, only if you're a true MotoGP junkie. You should probably, if not, just stay away, because you're going to get a sickness that's going to put you on a podcast eventually.
Exactly. One-way street to spending hours and hours talking to other men on the internet about motorcycles. But speaking of slow-mos and Andrea Iannone, we obviously saw Iannone getting a bit crazy in Valencia, sliding the rear tire of that Suzuki, and I think we could see the same in Sepang at turn three. That long sweeping left hander, I think that we're going to get some great slow-mo shots, especially of Andrea Iannone on that Suzuki just absolutely torturing it and the rear Michelin. So I'm very excited for that, because even if testing isn't that revealing or exciting, then we're certainly going to get excited by Crazy Joe, somebody else like Marco Melandri, who seems to have joined the bleach dyed hair fashion trend. I can't quite tell. My investigation is ongoing, because unfortunately Andrea Iannone and his trendy new girlfriend have put all of their Instagram posts in black and white because they're too trendy for colours. So as soon as I have an update on Andrea Iannone's hair, I will let everybody know. I know this is the most pressing issue in motorcycle racing.
Absolutely. You stay on it, Harry. Stay on it.
No worries. I get the hard scoops so other people don't have to. That's my motto.
It's the life of Motopod. All right, Harry. Well, I'm excited for testing. Either myself or Dave or you or whoever will be back, I'm sure, and talk loads about it next week. And I think that's probably a see ya for me.
Yep, and it's a see ya from me as well. Everybody will be back next week, as Skylar said, to talk about testing. So catch you then. Remember, Motopod at motopodcast.com for your emails, questions, comments, concerns, criticisms, everything like that. We can't wait to hear from you, and we can't wait for the season to begin. See you next week.
See you, everyone.